We're putting the band back together.
From the Twisted Minds, we brought you the original Fan Ball.
We had a bad pilot enough to turn goat piss in the gas.
This is the Fan Ball Fantasy Football Podcast.
If you're dumb, surround yourself with smart people. And if you're smart, surround yourself with smart people who disagree with you.
And welcome back to another episode of the Fan Ball Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm here with my co-hosts, John Tuvey. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Jay Clemens, you're doing well, I assume?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Yes. I'm not going to be a jerk anymore. I'm not going to tell people awesome. I'm fine. You don't need to ask. You
know? We made it to episode 15. Did you ever think we'd make it this far?
How many more till we get to syndication? That's the key, isn't it? That's when the big bucks start rolling in.
If this was a TV show, if this were a TV show, we'd be in the middle of season one, and we'd still have another five seasons to go before syndication. So, yeah, it's a grind.
If this were a TV show, we might have been canceled already. Now
the pilot might not have gotten off the ground.
Here's the thing. We're folksy people, you know? It's a good listen. People that do listen that tell me on Twitter, no, very few people actually complain outside of they tend to think that my voice trails at certain points when really I don't perceive.
Yeah, we're in Minnesota. Yeah. Everybody's too nice to complain right now. So let's get into what just happened this weekend. A lot of poor offensive outputs, except for but the Rams somehow.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, everybody knew the Rams were going to blow people out of the water. Well, that was something that we got right. We can probably touch on that slightly in the next segment.
So there are some injuries this weekend, some really painful ones to see because we've already had several painful ones. John, you want to tell us a few of those?
Well, let's jump in with my guy, Danny Woodhead. That one hurt a great deal. If you saw how the Ravens were using him on the first drive before he left the game, that's what I was envisioning for the full season. I mean, he was 3 for 33 receiving. He had a carry on that drive. I mean, he was set up to be exactly what I thought he was going to be, and then went down with the hamstring injury. And now it's going to be a significant period of time, is the timetable they've given us. So
I know. He was on pace for nearly 200 receptions, too.
Exactly.
Wait a minute. What's the timetable? Is it
there
a
isn't
tear?
Significant period significant of time period is of time. All they're telling us.
Oh, that's a tear. Yeah. You know,
well, even a strain is a tear. So
no, it's just a strain is something you can come back 3 to 4 weeks. Significant
it's
amount of time
tear. Right.
That says 6 to 8 right there.
Yeah. So and one of your guys that you're all over, Buck Allen, jumped in with 21 carries, which he managed to turn into 71 yards. The interesting thing for me was they didn't throw to any backs.
Weird. They led the NFL last year,
and they. set a franchise record for fewest rushing attempts, and they had 42 carries yesterday. So we talked about their first five games. They've got some fairly easy run defenses coming up here. This might be a great time to own Terrence West and or Buck Allen and then get out.
This is the saddest stat sheet I've ever seen before from a team that won by 20 points.
I know.
They had a max of 3 catches, and that guy was knocked out, 3 minutes into the second quarter? Okay. Though Macklin had 2 catches for 56, but the other one was just a harmless 8-yard thing. Not a single, I realize, score has a lot to do with it, just like Panthers 49ers yesterday, but not a single Baltimore player had more than 4 targets. That is sad. That is a sad stat sheet.
Can I ask you just a fundamental scheme change question? I mean, like, did the Ravens were widely talked about, they lost hundreds of targets, over 300 targets, I believe, from their offense. They lost. They don't really have a starting tight end. They got completely new wide receivers. Is it a different team now? Like, are they not? They led the NFL in pass attempts 2 years in a row. Is it just a completely different team now? And we shouldn't expect what we saw the last couple of years.
I think they could be yesterday, given the opponent. I don't know that they're going to be allowed to run like that every game going forward. But this first month, I think they might be.
I think score dictates a lot of this stuff. Yeah. And, you know,
you're up that much, you're going to run.
I had that argument with Church over the weekend on the radio show. I was trying to tell him that Flacco's averaged 45 pass attempts against the Bengals the last eight times he's played them. I mean, he had 17. I mean, if that doesn't that score dictates so much. And here's the thing. We've said this many different ways. NFL coaches don't care about fantasy, obviously. So, like as soon as this score got out of hand, I knew it was just going to be just something horrible, short of maybe A.J. Green or Bernard getting, like, a late touchdown with no time left, you know, just worthless to them, but meaningful to us. It was pretty bad.
Well, Woodhead out, significant period of time, potentially hamstring. We have three injuries that were potentially worse than him, and he's a pretty big name. We also had Allen Robinson. He's out with the torn ACL for the year. So, I don't know. What do you think, Jay? Who's next man up? Is it Hearns, or are you just selling all wide receivers in Jacksonville?
Here's
now?
The deal. When I first found out about it yesterday, I'm watching TV. I'm like, okay, this is a bad thing, but maybe this will be a good thing. It'll help D.D. Westbrook. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. He's on the six-week injured reserve thing. So even if you thought, well, this is something that he could pick up right away, you know, I'm sorry, Allen Hurns is a decent receiver in the NFL, but he cannot carry. He's not a wide receiver one. Marquise Lee, he's a slot receiver. Justin Blackman, you know, would have been great 4 or 5 years ago in this position, like, you know, to save the day. But there's nobody there. Like, I'm a little worried. Like, you know,
Sometimes I forget still have the rights to Justin Blackman.
I have a soft spot in my heart for the Jags. But it's hard to defend this group. The only saving grace is that they have a running back who can at least take the pressure off the receiving thing. But, man, there's no one I would touch outside of Fournette on this entire team.
And you nailed it on the head. He touched the ball. Of the 50 touches that the Jaguars had in week one, Fournette had 29 of them. Again, I don't know that game script is going to allow that.
Sure.
But that's where that team was heading, and one of the reasons I was down on Robinson heading in. But if he was going to have that success, that was going to open things up for Robinson. Now it's going to be a whole lot of 8 and 9 man boxes for Leonard Fournette, and he'll get the volume. Whether he'll be effective, I'm not quite as sold.
I think the number we're going to see at the end of the year when we look at Pro Football Reference, regardless of whatever Fournette gets yardage touchdown-wise, the number will be 3.8 as in yards per carry, because they have no choice. If they have any interest in winning it now, their defense is great, or their defense looked good against a really bad offense yesterday. But it's the defense and running game that is the only thing that can get them to 7 wins this year. And so Fournette better stock up, buddy boy, because he's getting the carries.
Well, they're already one win in the books and leading their division, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the AFC South division leaders.
I'm not making this up. Somebody on the radio yesterday, before the game started, referred to the AFC South as the most improved division in the NFL. I almost got in a car accident listening to that. Like, this is before we saw the Colts play. You know.
Oh, man. So Kevin White is also out for the year, most likely, with a collarbone injury. If not, they might as well just sit him anyway. It doesn't seem to matter.
Well, the telling stat there was that 14 of the 40 targets of Mike Glennon went to wide receivers. They were heavily to your guy Tariq Cohen. They were heavily to the tight end. They were heavily to Jordan Howard. Kendall Wright and Josh Bellamy had the most targets among wide receivers with 4 each. I still think the value guy here and the volume guy is going to end up being Kendall Wright. The ties to the Dowell Loganes era in Tennessee suggest that there's going to be volume, but it ain't going to be pretty, and I'm not going out of my way to load up on Bears receivers, that's for sure.
You know, in watching the game, it felt – I see that it's 4 targets each, but in watching the game, it felt more like Bellamy. It just did, for some reason.
I think he probably stepped into the right role. And so we saw more attention to him, and he might be the go-to guy next week. But like I said, I still think if I'm forced at gunpoint to add a Bears wide receiver to my roster, it's going to be Kendall Wright. I think Jay's shaking his head.
It would almost
like,
have to be
just,
a gunpoint.
Yeah, Jay's
I think
just,
that's
he's
thing.
Saying just shoot me.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, no disrespect to Kendall Wright, but you know, I wrote today in Revelations, we just published Revelations not too long ago. I didn't know who I knew the name Tariq Cohen, but I had not really watched him live. I don't know if that offense can function without him now, because it's Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, and I don't know how else they're going to do it. It's like Deontay Thompson, maybe, you know, like, you think of all the guys you see in college football, and like, Yeah, he'll play on Sundays, and then he doesn't make a team for whatever reason. The Bears are full of guys that somehow made the league, but you can't figure out why.
Yeah, and losing their top two wide receivers, that's rough. But probably not as rough as Arizona possibly losing David Johnson.
Yeah, we're looking at, I mean, the estimates have been half the season, or he might play next week. I mean, yeah. we don't know at this point yet. If you're a Kerwin Williams owner and you enjoyed the 5 carries for 10 yards or the 1 catch for 2 yards, the vulture TD,
hey,
he two got.
2 yard average, either way.
There you go. It won't be pretty, and that probably suggests lots of Carson Palmer. That offensive line better nut up and learn to pass block, and Larry Fitzgerald's going to get those 15 target games.
I'm just waiting for later this week that when they re-sign Chris Johnson for a week or something.
You're probably right.
It's like every
You're probably right.
Chris Johnson, I would take him over Kerwin Williams.
I mean
like,
he's not on the team right now.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like they Chris Johnson knows where he's going next week. You know, like, and keep in mind, a lot of veterans get cut week one, so they don't have to guarantee it. But and they have these little side deals of like, hey, stay out of trouble for week one. You'll be back week
two. So do you go with Arizona and knowing what you've got in Chris Johnson, or do you dip into Ryan Matthews if he's healthy, Matt Jones? I mean, is there
D'Angelo Williams?
Yeah, there's some warm bodies out there.
I consider all options.
D'Angelo Williams is not a terrible option.
No, he looked pretty good in Pittsburgh.
This is an all hands on deck. Kerwin Williams, we love you, buddy, but you're the Scott Tolzien of the running backs, where we want you on the roster, but we don't want you getting any kind of serious time.
I don't know, but Bruce Arians just a few years ago thought that Andre Ellington was going to be a 2,000-yard back, so maybe they need to get him more involved.
Well, yeah, when David Johnson first hit the ground, I was watching that game live, or at least on Red Zone, that was the very first thought. I was like, you don't go crazy like that unless you broke something. And so I will be shocked. Even if he plays next week, it'll be one of those things where he gives it a go.
How about we move on to some things we got right or wrong this last week? Jay, I heard you on the radio talking to Charge. You called Nelson Aguilar as a guy to pick up now before it's too late.
Let's call it for what it is, though. I did it on a hunch, not actual scientific numbers. Here's the thing. I'm not a fan of Torrey Smith. And so, but I was a huge fan of Jordan Matthews. So once the deck's cleared, I know Torrey Smith is technically, I got my hands and ear in quotes again, he's technically the wide receiver too, but Jordan Matthews was essentially a combo slot guy. But Torrey Smith can't really do the stuff in the slot that Aguilar or Jordan Matthews can do, so I figured that would open up the possibility. And yeah, Aguilar's first touchdown was luck. It was basically Carson Wentz scrambling like crazy and then hitting a guy downfield. But he should have scored a second touchdown.
That was an amazing play by Wentz, by the way.
They lined him up as a backfield. And he ran a motion, and then he sprinted back the other way, and he would have walked in the end zone if Wentz hadn't thrown it like slightly behind him. He still made the catch.
How many times did he have to tip it up to himself
like,
with Wentz?
Here's the thing. It's terrible. You know, Mike Lombardi, who I used to work with at Sports Illustrated back in the day, you know, he's got his blogs wherever he is. He called Doug Peterson last week the worst coach the NFL's head coach has produced since like 20 years. And I was like, based on what? Now, granted, Mike Lombardi has a contentious relationship with the Eagles. That might have something to do with it. But did you see how the players reacted to Peterson the other day? Like I thought they were very aggressive in their play call. They were creative, too. And so this is all a thing of Wentz is in year two. He's more settled. And now they know how to use Nelson Aguilar. And so I'm not projecting great things, but I certainly thought Sunday would be a good day. 6 catches, 8 targets. 68 yards and 1 touchdown should have been 2.
The telling fact for me, like you mentioned, the touchdown was flukish, but they had design plays. The one was it ended up being a fumble, the play where they ran Aguilar out of the backfield and threw him, and then they ran it the other way at the goal line. That tells me they want to go out of their way to get the ball
get
in this
involved guy's
hands. So, yeah, I'm on board with.
And let's be honest, it's kind of a put up, shut up year for him, too, because he has all the talent in the world. But if either they don't know how to use him or he doesn't know how to adjust to the game, which is it? So I think we'll find out this year.
Yeah, so let's go on to something you got right, John.
Good. And so we'll gloss over the whole 49ers offense debacle.
Garcon still had a good day, but not nearly what we thought.
We were all wrong, but in different spots. Like, I wasn't high on the passing game, but I was super high on Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde actually had a decent game. He didn't have that many touches. I think he had 87 yards, so, you know, which is okay. Something you can live with it.
But in a week like this, that was like probably fifth in the NFL
we were
in rushing.
All wrong on different parts, and even Church had was telling anyone Brian Hoyer. I mean, everyone just looked horrible there.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe we were underselling the Carolina defense as well. I'm going to give them a little bit more credit. But like I said, we'll gloss over that and go to something that I absolutely nailed on the head. The two worst offensive lines when I did my rankings earlier in the preseason and then just last week when I updated them were the Seahawks and the Bengals, which generated their offense is a total of zero touchdowns yesterday. The Bengals were shut out at home for the first time in I don't know how long. Five sacks to Baltimore, no points. Now they've got a short week, and they are at home to J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. You know, I thought A.J. Green was the one guy that was immune to this, but he had historically he tortures the Bengals. Five catches, 74 yards. I'm extremely worried about every element of the Bengals' offense. And in Seattle, they took three sacks against Green Bay, generated three field goals. Russell Wilson spent the entire afternoon running for his life.
Was this two or three games in a row that they played at Green Bay, terrible games?
Yes. I think it suggests they're going to try and get Chris Carson going. I mean, he looked pretty good running behind a really bad offensive line. But they have to do something because otherwise teams are going to be pinning their ears back and coming after Russell Wilson. And that was an offense that I had hoped would evolve into a passing game. I thought Wilson has enough mobility that offensive line, it's bad, but he can get outside the pocket and do some things. It was not pretty at all.
Those offensive lines are bad enough. And then the running back situations, Carson outplayed Lacy, in my opinion. And if Lacy can't get up against the Packers when he's at his best weight and healthy, I'm scared. And then Cincinnati, what'd they have? Seven carries, eight carries, and nine carries, or seven touches, eight touches, and nine touches for the three backs.
Right.
What's going to go on there?
Running games that you probably don't want any piece of, and the passing games, there's lots of concern. Seattle gets San Francisco, who defense, I won't say they were picked apart by Carolina, but they have some growing pains. So we'll get to see what Seattle can do this week.
I got lots of stuff wrong, too. Bilal Powell, I think I've learned I just can't trust the Jets at all. I just don't think that offense is going to move. And they started out with four touches to Forte instead of Powell. The Jets are intentionally tanking. I can tell you that much. Powell didn't have a terrible game, 8 or 9 points, but wasn't good either. The one I got right was Tarik Cohen. I wrote about him twice, and Zach Ertz, really, but I wrote about Tarik Cohen twice this week. He was the poster boy for my No Game Left Unturned article as a sneaky value, and I personally took him out of all my lineups half an hour before game time. So I'm
of course
unhappy
you
about
me?
That. No, I'm not kidding you.
What kind of idiot does that?
I taught him all week, and then I get like this gut feeling.
I taught Andy Dalton all week, and I didn't run tail.
Yeah, I got this. I don't know. I don't know what was wrong with me, but at the last minute, I just screwed it up.
You have whatever John Fox and Dowell Loganes had, because Tarik Cohen was not on the field.
Just call him Kenny Loggins
at the end of the game for the Bears. And the announcers were noticing, like, why is this guy who's been kind of the crux of your offensive success all day not on the field in crunch time?
Yeah, it was a great matchup for Cohen. The Falcons allowed nearly seven receptions to running backs per game last year, so it was a game made for Cohen.
And let's be honest, you don't really – like, I'm sure the coach is covered – well, what are we going to do against him? But until you see a guy on the field, I was writing this week, the rookies are going to be huge on the waiver wire. But not all of them are going to shine like they did when no one really pays attention to him. It's kind of like a baseball player that gets promoted from the minors. No one knows anything about him. He has really good stretch to start out off. But once they figure out a book against him, they do it. They defend him much better.
Yeah, and that he will have a lot tougher weeks. He's not the bell cow. Jordan Howard still touched him by a ton. And I will say this about Jordan Howard. People are like, oh, he'll be a better pass-catching back this year. You know, he dropped five passes in a game last year. He had eye surgery. He's going to be better. Still dropped the ball in this game because he turned his head.
I don't know if he dropped the ball. He just kind of – here's the deal. Like, I heard somebody say today that he would have scored a touchdown. No, I think he would have been knocked at the half-yard line. No, that would have given them options at the half. But as soon as he dropped that, I was like, oh, there's no way they're winning this.
Yeah, turning your head has nothing to do with your eyesight. That's all your gameplay.
And as I wrote yesterday, at watching – Mike Glennon dance around in the pocket, he will not be winning any dance competitions after he retires. That is for sure.
I also mentioned Cohen on this podcast last week. So for those of you that actually played him and listened to that, good job. Not good job on me for taking him out last minute. What was I thinking?
Who did you, I'm curious. Who did you take him out for?
In one of them, I had Todd Gurley, Zach Ertz, and Cohen in. I switched it to get David Johnson, and I had David Johnson, Kendall Wright, and I put in Evan Engram, and I wanted to kick myself because all three of the players I had in balled out. Okay. And it was mostly another one was just Kendall Wright for Cohen straight up, 3,000 for 3,100. I figured Kendall Wright was probably a safer play.
I was on board with Kendall Wright this week as well.
I got that wrong. It was just rough for me switching out last minute there. All right, so let's move on to what got our attention. We've already talked about a ton of things that really got our attention this week, but let's start with you, Jay. What caught your attention from week one?
Well, this isn't necessarily an attention thing because people expect a lot from him, but Matthew Stafford was brilliant in that game. And if you watched it live like I did, the majority of it, or you just looked at the box score, everything turned out okay. I've been clamoring for years, even when Kelvin was on the team, that the Lions needed a third receiver you could depend on. Well, they finally have it in Kenny Galladay. Sometimes it slips out.
T.J. Jones looked good, too.
But T.J. Jones is fine when
he's not a red zone guy. He's not a goal line
guy. He's fine between the 20s.
Sure.
But Kenny Galladay brings this new dimension that Stafford, frankly, hasn't had. He's always had Kelvin, but he's never had a third receiver like this. And granted, he's a rookie. But I loved Kenny Galladay those Tuesday nights watching Mac football on ESPN. it really paid off. But at the same time, I want to caution people, don't be fooled by his stats that look remarkably like what he would do in 2011 when he threw for 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns, things like this. The Lions are still committed to the running game. Their running game really was bad yesterday, but they're committed to this, and they're committed to Stafford being proficient in keeping his no desperation heaves one per quarter. Like, he's efficient. Like, his, if you take the last 2 years and yesterday, his completion rate is something like 68% now. That's what the Lions want. So it's not so much he's catching your attention, but don't think that what happened yesterday will be the normal thing. They're still a conservative offense in tone, and it's meaningless until they get a running game.
I hope that's true with most players in the NFL. Hoping, so many did so poorly. I hope that's not going to continue. But I know Matthew, he's going to come down. He won't throw for 304.
Stafford's ranking. Well, no, I know that. But Stafford's ranking consistently was somewhere between 14 and 16. So a lot of people are thinking,
which is weird considering how many times he's been a top 12 quarterback.
He's a top 10 to top 14 guy at best, even on his best day, over like a 2-3 week period. And so I feel great that he had a good game, but at the same time, the Lions are built for running success. They just haven't had it yet. They went out and acquired Ricky Wagner and T.J. Ling during the offseason, which the 2V knows. Those were run heavy acquisitions. So just keep in mind, the Lions are seeking balance.
Mm-hmm. And, John, what caught your attention today before we get out of here?
What caught my attention was the Oakland Raiders going out and signing Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch marching into the stadium looking good. They get to they ran four plays at X and goal.
Yeah.
And Marshawn Lynch did not touch the ball on any of them. They were all passes to Amari Cooper. One touchdown, three incomplete passes. Lynch's only carries in that area, he had a 3rd-and-3 carry that gained 2 yards at the 5. And then on 4th-and-1 from the 3, he gained a yard and got the first down. But I bought Marshawn Lynch as a guy that they're going to use to punch it in. Three shots.
I was surprised when they didn't on that one series.
You know, the first touchdown pass to Cooper, it was short of the goal line, and Cooper carried the pile for 5 yards. So that one's on Amari, and maybe you got to reward him again and give him another shot. I'm not sure. But why don't you go to Lynch any of those times inside the 5 yard line? I was scratching my head as a guy that owns Marshawn Lynch in touchdown heavy formats. I thought, this is not what I signed up for. So that caught my attention.
I'll take the converse of that. I actually thought he played a lot better than I thought he would.
Oh, I thought he looked good too. He looked great. It's just that goal line role that was confusing.
You see Tony Romo, who I thought did actually a decent job yesterday, he marveled on the one play where Lynch ended up getting to the 2 because he got hit early in the backfield, and he was like, oh, that's all him getting there. And, like, he looked pretty good for week one. I know people want the goal line carries. Very similar to what Gilsley had the other night against the Chiefs. If you're down there, you know, unless you're trying to win a Super Bowl, you give the ball to Marshawn Lynch in that thing, in that situation. But for the most part, I thought he looked a lot better than I thought he would. I thought he would be carrying that piano on his back, and I didn't see that at all.
No, he looked good between the 20s. That's nice. That's bonus for me. What I shelled out for was Marshawn Lynch from the three and in to get me some touchdowns, and didn't happen, and I'm concerned.
But, you know, if Cooper lands at the one on that bull rush, you know, Lynch gets the ball. I mean, like, these are circumstances.
I don't know. You know? They got the play before the two shots to Cooper was at the 1 yard line. It was first and goal at the one, and I was like, obvious Marshawn Lynch. Nope.
Yeah,
so
they threw,
I don't know.
Yeah, the play before
it's one game though. So.
Right, exactly. And yeah. And as a Cooper owner, I wasn't disappointed to see him throwing to him. I just as a Lynch owner, I thought this is what I'm paying for, and I'm not getting it.
By the way, you tweeted me during that game yesterday with a smiley face, Mariota rushing touchdown. Was that in reference to my squawking about how he only averages two per year?
You were saying he needs to do more.
Yeah, I actually wrote today in Revelations, because you kind of jog my memory. I'm like, don't expect a rushing touchdown in week two. He's already halfway to his seasonal quota.
Yes, he really is.
Pretty sure the Raiders were among the league leaders in giving up quarterbacks.
He looks fast on that run, too.
He's a fast guy.
I know. I'm pretty sure. I watched Minorgan. I love
him. We lined him up here at the parking lot right next. Between us and Target Field, that Mariota would probably win.
You know? you let me run halfway to Target Field, and Mariota will still beat me. I mean, we're what, about, I don't know, 300 yards away, 400 yards away from Target Field?
I don't know. I'd need a relay to do it.
It feels like we're a million miles away since I've yet to go in the stadium, but yes, we're close.
All right. So let's wrap it up here. All right, so we talked about a lot of things that are going to be in articles coming out today and tomorrow on fanball.com. You can also go to our lobby. We have plenty of Monday through Thursday and Sunday-only contests up for you to join. We already have our Week 2 pricing out. We'll have other DFS, more DFS-centric podcasts during the week. And just a reminder, always a good idea to put guys that have potential injuries, like Odell Beckham Jr., in your flex. Just so you don't get stuck with them, you can easily swap them out for not just a wide receiver, but any player. That's it's always a smart move to those iffy players. Put them in your flex on Fanball. Don't suck up a wide receiver spot and then be stuck to one position. And I think that's all. Anything else, John or Jay?
No, nice to have week one almost under our belts. Now we just got to fight traffic here in downtown Minneapolis, because I think the big trucks are in for Monday Night Football, and all those Saints fans, hopefully they brought some gumbo. I can find a tailgate to jump into.
The joke's on you guys. I'm leaving right now. I want to beat traffic.
Oh, man, I didn't even think of that. We have to drive right by U.S. Bank Stadium pretty much to go home. So
really?
I drive within the other way. Blocks.
Yeah, looks like I'm the smart one for once.
Oh, living on the wrong side of the cities, I guess, for me. Anyway, for John Tuvey, at J Tuvey on Twitter, for Jay Clemens at MIN_JayClemens, and for me, Scott Fish, at ScottFish24 on Twitter, thanks for listening. Have a great day.